Kick out to Simpson, who goes baseline, gets it to Wagner underneath and had it swatted out of there by Davis. And then Wagner follows up with a tip in. Davis takes a big deep breath. He's missed two of his last three. He's missed another one. And a rebound by Wagner and a timeout. He rifles it right in front of us to Abdul-Rahman at midcourt. Extra pass. And it goes for the win! The three-pointer by Jordan Poole! A freshman has won it for the Wolverines!
After the shot went in, I kind of didn't know it went in. I looked at the bench and saw everybody was celebrating. And I was always thinking that, like, if I hit a shot like that, I didn't want to get tackled. So I was kind of just trying to avoid everybody. I gave up, and, you know, they tackled me, and it was an amazing experience. We work on that play thousands of times in practice, and we executed it perfectly, especially from the inbound pass. Again, it's our senior guard, Muhammad. And Ham could have put the shot up easy, but he had the confidence to find me, and I just knocked the shot down.
We did not play well at a couple of positions tonight. We had tough games, and credit Houston for that. So sometimes you feel, well, geez, why did we win? We were fortunate. But you know what? I've been the other end of those type of plays many, many times. It flipped, and we got the great fortunate break. I mean, the kid Devin Davis is a really good foul shooter, right? And he misses the two to put us in that situation. So I'm really happy for Michigan, our university, our program, all the families that play, and mostly the players that they get to continue to play.
Down 11 at the half. Tate steals it. Knocked it right out of the hands of Nelson. All the way in. Two-handed jam. And the Buckeyes on a run. Bates Diaz has a strip by Tilly. Norvell on the push. Norvell, Eurostep. No. Finish, Nelson. Best player with the ball in his hands right now. He pulls a three. Oh. K to Bates Diaz. Bring it free. Perkins high off the window. Norvell with Weston on him. He'll rise up and hit it. Making plans for Los Angeles. That's it. The Gonzaga Bulldogs for the fourth consecutive season headed to the Sweet 16.
And I don't know what the first 4 or 5 minutes was all about. We missed a lot of layups. Maybe that was nerves. We didn't take fault or issue in the shots that we were getting or how we were attacking. We just missed some easy buckets. This group was incredible in their spirit to come back. And
Winston moves it ahead. Bridges. Attack!
Miles Bridges soaring through the air.
Battle. The penetration. Step back.
Oh, my goodness. Using his size to release just a little bit.
A pressure bucket for Tyus Battle.
Bridges. Step back. Tie. Rimming. No. Rebound. That's not good.
Lead away.
And for another tie-up. And this time, Syracuse has got it. Misses on the second attempt. Time is running out. Winston, a three. No good. The madness is real. The Orange crush the Spartans' tournament hopes.
Well, as everybody knows, it's been a different year. I don't think, me personally, I could have gone through the year without a group like I had. Every Michigan State person can be a little upset with me, but don't be upset with them, because they did their job in a very difficult time and did it with class and humility. You will never have better kids to appreciate than this group.
Look at this. And Lyles with the bucket.
Lyles driving in.
Left hand. And now the lead is up to 16 for the first time.
There's Lyles going past Wilkins, putting it up, and it falls. The kid's on fire.
He is.
Come on, top of the key. Three. Yes.
Oh, goodness.
Lyles.
Oh.
Can't miss.
I'll tell you what, this kid, he's hurt again.
Has it stolen? What has happened to Virginia?
Flustered because of this persistent performance.
Corner, three more by Lamar.
We saw it was close. This has been just total destruction.
Look at this.
Exclamation. 20-point lead. And the greatest upset in the history of this tournament is going to happen.
Superlatives, you can't come up with enough.
Absolute incredible performance. Shock and awe in college basketball. UNBC makes history in Charlotte.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. It is the extravaganza. Hope you're having an outstanding Monday. Thank you so much for joining us right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, where we are Toledo's sports leader. My, oh my. What a weekend. What an unbelievable weekend of college basketball. And a lot of other things, too, by the way. Movement in the NFL draft order in the top five. That is something that we should probably talk about. NBA news breaking a little bit late morning this morning around 10 o'clock, 10:30, somewhere in that neighborhood or so. We found out about Tyronn Lue. Stan Van Gundy, also known as Stan Van Sloppy in these parts, getting a $15,000 fine for whining and crying about the officiating in the Pistons' latest embarrassing loss. 8 out of their last 10, by the way, now losses for the Pistons. And the number beyond that, over out of their last 20 or 25, just as horrific. Stan Van Sloppy is going to be out of on his way out of town very, very soon, up in the D. So much to get into. How about your boys from Ann Arbor? If you are a Michigan fan, you have to absolutely be loving this. Your two chief rivals are out. The two chief rivals that continue to take you apart in football year after year, the Buckeyes and the Spartans, both out of the NCAA tournament. Especially big is Michigan State, of course, who were, you know, the trendy pick for a lot of people to win the whole doggone shooting match. But Sparty is done. You heard Tom Izzo there a little bit. The Buckeyes are done. They were nobody's pick to go to the Final Four, but still to see them lose to Gonzaga in a much closer game than they lost to Gonzaga in the regular season, by the way. To see them go out has to be somewhat satisfying for Michigan fans. And the Wolverines continuing to roll into the Sweet 16 yet again. And it took an amazing buzzer beater by a guy who looked like he was doing jumping jacks while shooting a game-winning three-pointer. What the hell is up with those legs, Jordan Poole? What is that? What is the splits that you're doing while you're letting fly the game-winning three with the buzzer sounding upon your release? What is that? And I especially loved, by the way, after Jordan Poole hit that, the true freshman hit that game winner for the Wolverines to beat Houston. I especially loved the game of keep away he played. As everybody, it was like they were playing tag, and everybody had to tag Jordan Poole. And he crossed guys up. He made spin moves. He went left. He went right, trying to avoid the inevitable dog pile that could probably lead to injury on a hardwood floor. But they eventually caught him, and he said in the postgame, he knew he wasn't going to be able to avoid him forever, so he stopped and got tackled and dogpiled on. And why not? What an unbelievable moment for the freshman. So many different things, so many elements and angles to get into. We'd love for you to be a part of the discussion today. I do have two guests who are going to be joining us at the bottom of each of our hours, at the bottom of this hour, well, after the bottom of the hour, Sports Center, that would be. Dennis Maniloff is going to join us from Cleveland to talk about why Tyronn Lue, the head coach of the defending Eastern Conference champion Cavaliers, is stepping away from his job. Earlier this morning, it was reported that he was stepping down from his job due to health reasons. Now they changed that, or shortly thereafter they changed that, and actually issued a press release, a statement from Tyronn Lue and from the club, changing it from stepping down to stepping away. And it could be a matter of a few days. It could be a matter of a few weeks. It could be not until the playoffs start will he come back. And who knows, depending on what this health issue really is, who knows if he'll come back for the playoffs. Who knows if he doesn't need to unwind and find whatever his condition is going to be, because it remains at this point undiagnosed, find the solution for that, and take many months off to do it. And then, of course, come back next year as the head coach of the Cavaliers. Or not, if he chooses not to. But Dennis Maniloff will give us the latest on that coming up at about 3:35 or thereabouts. So I'm looking forward to that conversation. He, of course, is in Cleveland. So he was at Cleveland Clinic Courts talking to the team and getting an idea of what the Tyronn Lue situation is. The statement, by the way, from Lue, quote, after many conversations with our doctors, and Kobe, meaning General Manager Kobe Altman, and much thought given to what is best for the team and my health, I need to step back from coaching for the time being and focus on trying to establish a stronger and healthier foundation from which to coach for the rest of the season. So the goal is clearly the rest of the season. He wants to come back, but we'll see. He said, quote, I have had chest pains and other troubling symptoms compounded by a loss of sleep throughout the year. Despite a battery of tests, there have been no conclusions as to what the exact issue is. So he remains undiagnosed, But when you are talking about not being able to sleep and multiple chest pains, and I'm no doctor, so I won't try to pretend to be one on the radio, but and when you look at the fight, the on, you know, television sideline argument that he had with LeBron James as a part of that disastrous West Coast trip, it looks like a stress-induced situation to me. It looks like there is an awful lot of stress on this young man. And I say young man because Ty Lue is only 40. He is a very, very young man. The stress that he is enduring as the head coach of maybe the most dysfunctional franchise going right now, and that's a bit of a stretch maybe given the state of the, you know, the Suns and other teams that are just horrible. But, you know, of the good teams, there is a lot of dysfunction on this particular roster. First of all, the LeBron James question. Is he going to stay? Is he going to go? Second of all, the turnover of the roster. You know, the Rondo, Wade, Derrick Rose, Jay Crowder experiment was a big failure, so they all got shipped out, and the new guys coming in and big struggles after they did, after the All-Star break. It's all sitting on Tyronn Lue, who had to figure out this rotation and then the next rotation, and then that got changed, and Kevin Love went out, so now he's got to figure out this rotation. And he's feeling the pressure. And getting yelled at by LeBron James on the sideline is probably not helping things very much on national television. He's feeling a lot of pressure. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. Like I said, even if I was, I haven't examined him. But it just doesn't look like a whole lot more than stress. And, you know, when you add Ty Lue walking away from the team for whatever the period of time will be, if it's days or weeks or whatever, over what looks like maybe he's having some stress issues, to Kevin Love leaving a game with a panic attack for the first time in his career, there's a lot of stuff going on there. To J.R. Smith throwing soup at an assistant coach, getting suspended. I mean, there's just a lot of stuff going on there. Really a lot of stuff. And I just wonder if it isn't all getting to Ty Lue. So they shut him down. And the team shut him down, according to one source close to the situation. They shut him down, and it's probably something that should have been done a while ago because his health is just not good right now. So we'll talk with Maniloff about that. Then coming up at 4:40 or so, we will talk, as we always do, with Paul Keels, the voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes, about the Buckeyes' tournament run coming to an end after one victory and then a loss in the second round, the round of 32 to Gonzaga. But it's not that loss that we will focus on at this particular point in time. What we want to focus on, or at least what I would like to focus on now, are some of the more important questions as we watch. By the way, Jim Cushing, can you go back? And I say this, by the way, not to make fun of you. I mean, because when I'm wrong, I own my incorrect predictions.
Okay.
I'm not even doing this to like make you own it. I'm just trying to remember what you said right before the tournament when we were going through the brackets, and it was something about you don't see a lot of upsets this year. You're going to look at more chalk than you normally do whenever you fill out a bracket in each year. And we were talking about it with you and myself and Chris Daubertine, and I think there was some agreement with you to the West. That's why, like I said, we're not this isn't to dog you, because I think there was some agreement about it. But can you remind me exactly what it was you said and why you didn't think there would be a plethora of upsets in this particular NCAA tournament?
No, the way I had said it was that I thought it was going to be a little more chalk than normal. That's how I was doodling them out last weekend, and I kept coming up with the not upsets in the vast majority of cases. I didn't like some of the matchups in these, and as you point out, I certainly wasn't the only one along these lines, and just goes to show how crazy the best sporting event in the calendar year in America really can be.
Yeah, and that's the reason why I'm asking is because of the, well, I guess it's a question whether it's the shocking nature of this tournament or not, because if you really bought into, if anybody listening really bought into what you were saying, then this is even more shocking than ever that we had a 16 beat a 1, and that we have a situation, for crying out loud. I mean, look at the blue bloods, as they are sometimes known. look at the Blue Bloods who are out of this tournament before we even got to the round of 16. Virginia, the number one overall seed, is out. Xavier, a number two overall seed?
No,
they were the other one.
They were the other one. I think they were two or three. I can't remember on the pecking order, per se.
UNC, North Carolina, out. Cincinnati, a two seed, out. Michigan State, a three seed, out. Arizona, a four seed, out. These are not, you know, just this year. Well, I think Virginia might fall into that category. I was going to say just this year, you know, considered to be like one of the elite. These are some of the elite programs on a regular basis.
Right.
On an annual basis, Michigan State is always in the mix for the title. You know, Arizona, considered to be that as well.
Sure.
Historically. Carolina certainly is. Xavier and Cincinnati, depending on the year, always a factor when you get to the round of 16, at least. And Virginia, this particular year, only two losses and you know, the number one overall seed in the tournament. Didn't you say Xavier was like the third one?
I think so. I want to say Villanova was the second one.
I think you're right. That's correct. Thank you for the reminder. Okay. So let's get to the point here. The point of all of this is, in a tournament, if you bought into what you said, if people bought into what you said, then this is even more shocking. But if you didn't buy into it, this is exactly what you have come to expect. Absolute insanity at tournament time. With the exception of, again, these top programs, we have seen top seeds, ones and twos and threes, go down from time to time in the past. But the number of schools now that are among those top seeds that are historically great programs, the Blue Bloods, the traditional excellent programs going down, begs the question, is this a sign of the times? Is this a sign of what the one-and-dones situation has brought or hath wrought on college basketball? That with the great programs now going after and getting the five-star prospect kids, knowing they're only going to be there for a year, they don't have a chance to recruit, develop, and produce sustained and established greatness in the way that they used to do, which makes them much more ripe because of younger players who have only had one season together, despite their extreme talent, makes them more ripe for upsets from programs that are stable. And when you look at some of these programs, UMBC, by the way, notwithstanding, because I like many others, did you, before the tournament started, Jim, did you know what UMBC stood for?
Yes, I actually did.
Okay, then you're one of the very, very small
minority. Yes, I am definitely in the minority that I actually, I swear to God, knew what it stood for.
I had no idea. I had no idea who they were when I saw that they were leading and that they were actually going to do this thing. University of Maryland, Baltimore County, which is just, you know, I mean, you hear the word county and you think community college. You know, I mean, it's that small and that tiny, right?
Yep.
But when you have smaller programs, not quite like that, but when you have a Buffalo, for example, beating Arizona the way that they did, or when you have a Texas A&M taking down Carolina as badly and as easily as they did, what do those teams have in common with one another? They're made up of maybe not every, you know, every player on the roster is a five-star recruit from a high school in America, but they were all at least three or four-star recruits, and they're all on their second, third, or fourth years of playing together. And sometimes it's easier to get a bunch of slightly less talented guys who know each other and know the system and know the game and know, you know, who buy into the program long-term to beat a team that has higher talent, but guys who don't buy into the program because they ain't never going to be part of the program. They're here for a year only because the NBA says I can't come yet. The NBA has blocked me, so I got to play someplace for the next year, and I'll go here. And they're not buying in. They're biding their time. Rather than buying in, they're biding their time. And I'm not pointing the fingers at any one player or team of players of one-and-done guys, but I just feel like what we are on right now is the precipice, the tipping point of where college basketball is headed. And that is Blue Bloods and big-time programs recruiting the best players who they know they're not going to have longer than a year, maybe in the rare occasion a second year, maybe, who are always going to be vulnerable to the team that is very well coached and it's got a team full of guys that love each other, that have bought in, that they become really truly a family with one another the way so many great programs used to be. So that's just something. We're going to talk more about that as we continue. We're going to get a timeout here, but we'll talk more about that. We're going to talk about all of the upsets. And I do want to ask about that UMBC win over Virginia, the number one overall seed, as some people continue to call it the greatest upset in college basketball history. Some are calling it the greatest upset period in sports history. Those people I would like to smack upside the head with a hockey stick that was carried by one of the Miracle on Ice Team USA players. All right? That's what I would like to do. I would also like to punch them with an uppercut as hard as I could wearing one of the gloves that Buster Douglas wore against Mike Tyson in Tokyo about 30 years ago. Not quite 30 years ago. Those people are morons. But where does it rank in terms of all-time upsets? And we're going to analyze that as we continue. But for now, it's 3:28, so we want to get to a local bottom-of-the-hour sports center right after we get wild.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. Some extra wild stats from that UMBC win. We know that 16s are now 1-135. No, that's not true, Jim. It was 135-0, I thought, going into this tournament.
No, it was 132-0 going into this tournament.
Okay. I thought I saw the 135 earlier, and it would have been 1-138 now. But okay, so you're saying it was 32. Thank you for the clarification. So they're now 1-135 against number one seeds all time. The 20-point loss by Virginia, the third worst by a one seed in any round in any matchup in the history of the tournament. UMBC becomes the second double-digit underdog to win a game in the tournament by 20-plus points. The other, Utah's win over Zona in 1998 Elite Eight. Also, the game was tied at 21 at halftime. First time in 4 years that a number one seed didn't lead the 16 team at halftime. The 2014, by the way, a game was also Virginia. That day trailed Coastal Carolina by 5 points at the break. So a host of wild stats, because Cushing couldn't decide which one was the wildest of all. Well, that's pretty much it. Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. All right, let's get about them at the Arrow Sports Center. Come back, talk a little bit more about the NBA and the Ty Lue situation. Maniloff will join us out of Cleveland on that. We'll get his thoughts on the tournament as well. And I want your thoughts at 866-240-1065 coming up on the...
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza. ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
If I'm told that Ty and the Cavs are hopeful that this will be sooner than later, as in days, maybe a week, before he's able to really take a look at coming back on the bench, that he expects to be back well before the start of the playoffs. This is a short-term decision to step away, and that he'll be back within days, whether that's 5 to 7, 7 to 10, that's the time frame that they're looking at.
That would be the optimum situation for Tyronn Lue to return to the Cavaliers. And again, the news early today that came across my feed was that Ty Lue was stepping down due to health reasons. That was quickly changed to Tyronn Lue stepping away for health reasons. Those are two very, very different sentences just with the one word change. So clearly he is not stepping down as the head coach, but he is taking time to deal with these health issues. What does that mean? Well, that's why we want to go out to Cleveland and check in with our friend Dennis Maniloff, who covers the Cavaliers. He joins us now here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket. D-Man, how are you?
What's up, Bob? Thanks for having me on.
D-Man, I want to talk NCAA tournament with you, the brackets being busted, the plethora of upsets that are a little bit more extreme than in previous seasons past, previous tournaments past. But obviously, we do want to start with the blockbuster news today that Tyronn Lue, who has been dealing with some health issues, stepped away. Dennis, I'm not a doctor, and I know you're not either, and you're closer to the situation than I, which is why you're here. But from a distance, I'm looking at Ty Lue, and I'm looking at everything he's had to deal with this season. I'm looking at having to deal with Dwayne Wade and D. Rose and Jay Crowder and Isaiah Thomas and that first group of guys that were here that could not get along. I'm looking at him having to deal with J.R. Smith throwing soup at one of his assistant coaches. I'm seeing a fight on the sideline the other night with LeBron James in the middle of another loss, you know, during a terrible road trip, which has continued the spate of very inconsistent, if not poor, play by the new roster since the All-Star break. And I'm seeing a guy who's got to be undergoing a lot of stress. And when he says that there are chest pains involved, and yet everything that has been done, every test that has been done on him has come back inconclusive, and there is no diagnosis right now, I think here's a guy who is stressed beyond anybody's imagination. But again, that's just a layman talking on the radio, not being a doctor. What do you see and what do you know about the condition of Ty Lue?
Well, unfortunately, I can relate on a small level. I'm not a head coach of a major, you know, professional team, but I've had a sleep disorder and severe anxiety to deal with since 2002. So I know the symptoms when I see them, and I read up on what has been said about Lou. And one of the things they're talking about is his lack of sleep, or his sleep disruption, his sleep deficiency. And my personal, experience is that I have struggled incredibly since 2002 because I can't get enough sleep. And what happens when you don't get enough sleep is the anxiety ramps up dramatically. You're not able to contain or control the anxiety and the nerves like you used to because you haven't gotten enough restorative sleep. And one of the symptoms that I've had to deal with year after year after year is chest pains that are, you know, you feel like you're having some sort of a heart issue, but you have to convince yourself that, no, it is a byproduct of what you're going through in terms of lack of sleep and anxiety. I'm not saying that's absolutely what is plaguing Lou, but it can explain why they say that his symptoms are why they say that his tests come back negative, because I've had chest, you know, tests and the echoes and all that kind of stuff done and the stress test done, and they say your heart's fine, your heart's fine, your heart's fine. But when you're going through this, you can't convince yourself that your heart is fine, and you actually do feel chest discomfort. So, as I said, unfortunately, I can relate. I'm not positive that's what he's dealing with, but I think the key is he has to figure out how to get some sort of sleep regularity, and I don't think that's easy because I haven't been able to do it for 16 years.
Wow. Thank you for that, Dennis. That's a very interesting perspective, since you're going through something that you believe to be similar. So let me ask you, has your sleep disorder led to what has been diagnosed as an anxiety disorder?
Yes. Yes. Before October of 2002, I did not have, I had virtually negligible nerves or anxiety or anything like that. Since the sleep trouble began, and then, of course, the prescription pills for the sleep to try to counteract, my anxiety ratcheted to the point where I have been diagnosed with severe anxiety and depression, and I'm not, you know, those are usually linked. I'm not trying to say, you know, the depression like a lot of people think, but you automatically, in a lot of cases, link depression to severe anxiety when you get that diagnosis. So, yes, my anxiety, my nerves are frayed. It's a very difficult existence. And here's the thing. I'm just a sports writer, okay? I can't even fathom what it's like to be a professional coach and deal with this type of stuff, deal with a sleep disorder, if, in fact, Lou has one or he's struggling to find sleep. Because one of the things that I've had to do, Bob, over the years is drastically reduce my travel. I can barely travel at all. And one of the reasons is I have to have such a controlled environment to even have a chance to get a few hours of sleep. You take me out of my controlled environment, and time after time after time, it's disrupted. So here, even worse than normal. So here's the thing, where you got Lou going around, you know, flying around hotels, late night games, you know, getting up early for meetings and all that stuff. I don't know how a professional coach can do it. I really don't.
Dennis Maniloff joining us from the Cleveland Plain Dealer and Cleveland.com, talking about Cleveland Cavaliers coach Tyronn Lue announced earlier today he is stepping away from his team for a period of time, an indefined period, indeterminate period of time right now. They're hoping it's shorter than longer, but nobody knows at this point because his diagnosis, it remains unclear. He says that he has some chest pains. Dennis, in fact, let me add that, since you know you're using yourself as a comparative model, and I do appreciate that, with the understanding, of course, that your situation is much different than his and everybody's.
And I'm not automatically trying to say that what I've been dealing with, but it the similarities to what's being said about him and what he has said and what I've heard There are plenty of similarities.
I respect that. I respect the point that you're making, and you're not saying it's identical at all, because you haven't examined him either. So I get it. This is just, you know, not anecdotal, but it's observational based on what we're being told about him, which is why my last comparison between you is to ask about the chest pains. Those are obviously of great concern. You start feeling tightness or pain in the chest. You start thinking about heart conditions and whatnot. Has your condition manifested itself in chest pains the way apparently that his has?
Yes, periodically. You don't know when it's going to strike. It's not always tied to high anxiety. I mean, there have been times over these, you know, what does it say? Yeah, like I said, 16 years.
Yeah.
Over this time where I've had a high anxiety level, been very, very nervous, but it hasn't automatically manifested itself in chest pains. There have been other times where I'm going along my day as normal, and all of a sudden, here it comes, you know, and so you can't necessarily predict when these chest pains are going to occur, but if they're not heart-related, I can certainly relate to how they're happening. They actually do happen. It's not a mental thing. You know, it's driven me crazy where I've actually said to myself, am I imagining something that's not there? And one of my doctors over the years said, no, you're not imagining, more than one of the doctors has said it. They said, no, you're not imagining anything. It's an actual physiological symptom of the anxiety and the lack of sleep. And let me say this about the timetable. Again, if it's sleep-based, please, whoever you are, do not put a timetable on Ty Lue's return. I mean, don't even think about, well, we need to get him back, you know, at X number of days or before the playoffs or whatever. Because, I mean, it's a deep, hard problem to solve. I obviously haven't solved it in 16 years. So I'm saying what they need to just figure something out with Lue and not worry about trying to get him back anytime soon.
Dennis Maniloff joining, and I agree with that, by the way. Do you, does it matter, maybe is a better question, Dennis, whether or not this has been brought on by the circumstances surrounding this year's team? You know, as we talked about, the struggles with the previous roster, the purging of that roster, the addition of a new roster, and now going through different types of struggles. He's had to continue to figure out new rotations, the lineups with a whole bunch of new guys. Kevin Love being out, again, the off-the-court stuff with J.R. Smith. And, you know, Kevin Love had a panic attack, too, which I find is just, obviously, it's coincidental. I'm not saying one is connected to the other. It's just weird. Kevin Love never had a panic attack in his life. Had one this season in the middle of this very trying, stressful season. Ty Lue has never had a situation like this with anxiety attacks, and yet here he is, unable to sleep, etc. And then again, the specter of LeBron leaving, hanging over the franchise, billboards in town saying come to Philly, billboards on the road saying come to L.A., all of this stuff piling on. And then, you know, what we talked about, the little verbal spat that they had on the sideline the other night. In other words, if it is this team that is causing this for him, isn't it conceivable that he shouldn't come back this year and start next year with a fresh team and a fresh approach, and whatever's going to happen in the offseason is going to happen as far as player movement? I mean, it almost seems like it might be, if what I'm saying is the cause of this, or is suggesting might be the cause of this, is real, it might be unhealthy for him to return at all with this particular group.
Bob, I hear what you're saying, but I disagree to this extent. I think that, just me trying to put the puzzle pieces together, my feeling is Ty Lue had stress from the moment he took the job as head coach, the moment he replaced David Blatt. And he had stress in that championship year. He had stress the following season. I think that every NBA, NFL, MLB, NHL head coach has high levels of stress. Most of them are able to handle it, in my opinion, because they have their sleep foundation underneath them. When the sleep is disrupted to such an extent that you just can't get it and you start to have an insomniac situation, which is what I had for a month before I went to the doctor in 2002, and then I was prescribed prescription sleeping pills, and that was, you know, that's, I've been on them ever since, and they, even they don't do all that much. But the point is, once the sleep's disrupted, then the anxiety, or the nerves, the anxiety, team-related stuff that you had been dealing with becomes incredibly difficult to deal with, I would imagine. And that's why I disagree that it's necessarily this team at this time, more so than the fact that he's not getting sleep. He wouldn't be able to handle any team right now, in my opinion, even if it was a team full of choir boys who don't cause any trouble at all.
Fair enough, Dennis, and I appreciate your analysis there, as well as, you know, the first-person account of what you go through and the similarities there. Okay, I want to shift gears. Well, actually, let me just stay on the Cavs to this extent then. What happens to them now with Larry Drew calling the shots? You know, we all know that they're not going to catch, you know, Boston and Toronto. They're going to end up as a three seed at best in the Eastern Conference playoffs. But they want to get on a run, don't they, toward the end of this regular season? The last week of March is quickly approaching, and you got, what, a couple of games in April before the playoffs start? I mean, can this team hit a stride under Larry Drew? Will they use this as a rallying point? You know, let's do this for Ty Lue. Or will it just kind of add to the, you know, the strange circumstances that have led to a very underwhelming season thus far?
Yeah, probably a little bit of all of what you said. I think Larry Drew has a lot of respect from his players, just as I thought Lue had a lot of respect, you know, when he was an assistant under Blatt. So nothing's changed there. Drew's got, you know, NBA credentials. So they're going to listen to him. You know, I don't know that they would necessarily rally for T. Lou alone, but he would be part of it. And of course, you know, on balance, they like him. You know, there are disagreements, public spats, as you noted, but yeah, overall, they like and respect Ty Lou. He's won a title, by the way. So, you know, he has credentials. As far as the season goes, yes, they need to kick it into gear. You wonder when that, you know, they're running out of time in the regular season. Obviously, Kevin Love is close, which is a very encouraging sign, or very encouraging news for the Cavs, because you figure, all right, because Love was even listed, I think, as questionable on today's injury report. So let's assume he doesn't play today. Let's say even maybe next week is the beginning of Kevin Love's return. You've still got a couple weeks there where you can get Love in game shape to go with other guys that you're hoping get healthy. It is possible that this team does hit its stride by the end of the regular season, even while they're, you know, they're not playing for the top seed, they're not playing for the two seed. They might not even scratch to try to get the three or the four seed if it means resting a few guys at the end of the season. And they'll just trust their veteran ability to win on the road in the playoffs.
Dennis Manilov joining us for a little preview of what the Cavaliers have to face now without their head coach, Ty Lue, and we'll see whether or not they can get settled in under Larry Drew. Okay, let's just quickly talk about the tournament, Dennis, because I've never asked you about your bracket because we didn't talk about that last week as far as who your Final Four was. But just to throw it out there for the sake of stating it, Virginia, the number one overall seed is gone. Xavier, a number one seed, is gone. UNC, a two seed, is gone. Cincy, a two seed, is gone. Michigan State, a three seed, is gone. Arizona, a four seed, is gone. These are some of the elite programs of elite programs in college basketball, not just this season, but for many of them, every single season, victims of wild upsets, including the first ever 16-1. My question to you, Dennis, is this the start of a trend where schools made up of, you know, let's say, you know, 3- and 4-star players that play together for 2, 3, 4 years at a time are going to start getting the best of 5-star players who are one and done, who never get a chance to truly buy in to their program's, you know, philosophy and to learn to play with one another and to have a chance to let greatness happen? Or is this just an aberration, just some crazy stuff happened this year, and next year all will be right with the world?
I've answered this way before with you, Bob. I you're right on both counts, I think. You know, I'm not trying to middle it, but it really is true. On one hand,
Lego my ego.
You can make a case. What's that?
Lego my ego.
Well, no, I mean, you make such good points. Well, I'm not waffling. I'm actually, what I'm doing is I'm taking my answer, by forming my answer from both your questions.
Okay.
Part A, I agree. I think that a veteran group that might not have the, you know, the automatic NBA guys or certainly the one and done guys because they wouldn't be there otherwise. You know, that group that's together and well coached, can win in the NCAA tournament. How about I'll add this? Guys who transfer, but aren't necessarily NBA caliber players and they have a chip on their shoulder and they're grinding about some slight that they had earlier in their college career, maybe at a different stop, and they come to a team that's well coached. So they can win against a young group of super studs. And then the other part of your question is it an aberration? I mean, I think this slew of upsets is more of an aberration than it is a trend. Some might even say, well, the seeding was poor. You know, you shouldn't have seeded certain teams as high as they were, therefore you wouldn't have, or some as low as they were, otherwise you wouldn't have these quote-unquote monumental upsets. But I look at the, you know, I look at the seeding, and I didn't think it was outrageous. I thought, you know, some people were even saying Michigan State deserved a higher seed. You know, Arizona was supposed to be a super team. I didn't have that much of a quibble with the seeding this year. I think this is just one of those years where, you know, the stars aligned for a series of upsets, and I don't think you can bank on this year over year going forward.
I think that's fair enough. Let me ask you this. Is parity then, and maybe you answered it to an extent, but I want to ask it using that word. Is parity a thing in college basketball right now, or are there still just a bunch of haves and have-nots?
I would lean toward more the haves and the have-nots because you haven't done anything to get rid of a Villanova. As an example, I mean, you talk about my bracket. I don't like to talk about my bracket because everybody else does. But I had Villanova winning the championship. I have everybody else out by now.
The other three of your final four are out, you're saying?
Yes, but I have Villanova winning the title, so I can cling to that. You're still going to have the superpower in Villanova. You have Duke is still in the mix. Kentucky is still in the mix. You know, North Carolina won it last year, you know, their early exit. Villanova won it 2 years ago. They were an early exit last year. So you still have your powerhouse teams. They're not going away. You know, I would suspect they don't go away even if something is done about the one-and-done rule. You're still going to get players to coach, to go play for guys like Jay Wright or Coach K as long as he goes or, you know, Roy Williams as long as he goes. So I think that the powers, it's not a parity situation over the course of the season.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean it can't be, you know, it can't have, you know, smatterings of parity in a tournament where it is truly one and done. You know, one game, you can be, you know, if you're a great shooting team and you're off that night or your depth perception on the backboard in the arena doesn't quite fit your eye and you find yourself down 15 points with 10 minutes to go, you might lose to a team that would be, you know, that you would beat consistently in a regular season.
Dennis, let me jump in and ask you this about this particular tournament, because we only have 2 minutes left, about this particular tournament being what it is. With all of those blue blood names that I just mentioned that are out and all of those high seeds that are out, is this good for college basketball or bad for college basketball? And as you answer that, consider the possibility of it continuing for one more round. If we get to an Elite Eight in which a bunch of these top-seeded blue-blooded teams go down, is it good for college basketball to see, for example, a K-State Nevada Elite Eight matchup? And I'm just looking down at the brackets now in the West and seeing, Florida State Texas A&M going into the, you know, the winner of that game going to the Final Four? Or will people look at that and yawn and say, I don't know those teams and I don't know those guys. Yeah, upsets are fun, but that's boring. I'm not watching. So are those upsets and this kind of thing that's going on this year good or bad overall?
Nah, I think it's good, Bob, but I would need to see the ratings for games in the Final Four involving teams, upstart-type teams, or games in the Elite Eight. Like, I think of George Mason under Larrañaga years ago. You know, the upset teams that get deep into the tournament, what are the TV ratings for those games? Because my sense is they're going to be pretty comparable to games that involve super teams because it's the tournament. If it were a regular season situation, you probably wouldn't get anywhere near the viewers as you would a super team matchup. But because it's NCAAs, because it everything surrounding March Madness, my feeling is it's fine that you have the so-called nondescript teams advancing because the tournament takes care of the interest.
I agree with you. We have to see what those ratings say, Dennis, but I'm going to predict that you're wrong in that regard. I don't think the tournament is going to save it. For example, comparing KU, Kansas, which is still a 1, and Duke, which is still a 2, which are, they're both alive in the Midwest, Kansas and Duke will get a massive rating. Massive. If that turns out to be Syracuse against Clemson, people ain't watching just because it happens to be the tournament. People aren't going to care that much about Clemson and Syracuse. And not that Syracuse isn't a blue blood and Jim Boeheim and everything else, but they were a first four play-in game team, and, you know, they're an 11 seed. And that won't get the same rating that a Duke and Kansas will. Wouldn't you agree to that?
Well, when you put it that way, yes.
That's where I'm going. Villanova, the team that you picked?
I have to walk back my dream world, but yeah. you're almost certainly right. I guess now that I think of it, if you have two powers going at it with two legendary coaches and programs, you're going to have a different ratings point. But I wonder if it's going to be enough to where you would say, oh, my gosh, the tournament has to have the stars or else.
Yeah, I don't know that I would go that far or else, but it's just there will be a difference. We got to run there, D-Man. Great stuff, my friend, and thank you again for opening up on the situation with Ty Lue. I really appreciate the sentiments.
Thanks, my friend.
Thank you very much, Dennis. All right, let's catch up on our clock now, top of the hour. Don't forget, Paul Keels from the Buckeye, the voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes Radio Network, will join us in hour number two coming up on ESPN.
Kick out to Simpson, who goes baseline, gets it to Wagner underneath and had it swatted out of there by Davis. And then Wagner follows up with a tip in. Davis takes a big, deep breath. He's missed two of his last three. He's missed another one. And a rebound by Wagner on the timeout. He rifles it right in front of us to Abdul-Rahman at midcourt. Extra pass. And it goes for the win! The three-pointer by Jordan Poole! A freshman has won it!
After the shot went in, I kind of didn't know it went in. I looked at the bench and saw everybody was celebrating. And I was always thinking that, like, if I hit a shot like that, I didn't want to get tackled. So I was kind of just trying to avoid everybody. I gave up, and, you know, they tackled me, and it was an amazing experience. We worked on that play thousands of times in practice, and we executed it perfectly, especially from the inbound pass to getting it to our senior guard, Muhammad. And Ham could have put the shot up easy, but he had the confidence to find me, and I just knocked the shot down.
We did not play well at a couple of positions tonight. We had tough games, and credit Houston for that. So sometimes you feel, well, geez, why did we win? We were fortunate, but you know what? I've been the other end of those type of plays many, many times. It flipped, and we got the great fortunate break. I mean, the kid Devin Davis is a really good foul shooter, right? And he misses the two to put us in that situation. So I'm really happy for Michigan, our university, our program, all the families that play, and mostly the players that they get to continue to play.
Down 11 at the half. Tate steals it. Knocked it right out of the hands of Melson. All the way in. Two-handed jam. And the Buckeyes on a run. Big Steele has a strip by Tilly. Norvell on the push. Norvell, Eurostep. No. Finish Melson. Best player with the ball in his hands right now. He pulls a three. Oh. K to Bates. Diop. Frigate free. Perkins high off the window. Norvell with Weston on him. He'll rise up and hit it.
making plans for Los Angeles. That's it. The Gonzaga Bulldogs, for the fourth consecutive season, headed to the Sweet 16.
I don't know what the first 4 or 5 minutes was all about. We missed a lot of layups. Maybe that was nerves. And we didn't take fault or issue in the shots that we were getting or how we were attacking. We just missed some easy buckets. This group was incredible in their spirit to come back. And
Winston moves it ahead. Bridges. Attack! Miles Bridges soaring through the air. Tap. The penetration. Step back.
My goodness, using his size to release just a little bit.
A pressure bucket for Tyus Battle. Bridges, step back, tie, rimming, no, rebound, that was good. Knocked away, and a whistle for another tie-up, and this time Syracuse has got it. Misses on the second attempt, time is running out. Winston, a three, no good! The madness is real! The Orange crush the Spartans' tournament hopes.
Well, as everybody knows, it's been a different year. I don't think, me personally, I could have gone through the year without a group like I had. Every Michigan State person can be a little upset with me, but don't be upset with them, because they did their job in a very difficult time and did it with class and humility. You will never have better kids to appreciate than this group.
Look at this. And Lyles with the bucket.
Lyles driving in.
Left hand. And now the lead is up to 16 for the first time.
There's Lyles going past Wilkins. Putting it up. And it falls. The kid's on fire.
He is.
Come on, top of the key. Three. Yes.
Oh, goodness.
Lyles.
Oh.
Can't miss.
I'll tell you what, this kid, he's hurt again.
Has it stolen? What has happened to Virginia?
Flustered because of this persistent performance.
Corner, three more by Lamar.
What we saw was close. This has been just total destruction.
Look at this.
Exclamation. 20-point lead. And the greatest upset in the history of this tournament is going to happen.
Superlatives, you can't come up with enough.
Absolute. Incredible performance. Shock and awe in college basketball. UNBC makes history in Charlotte.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed it is. Rolling onward in hour number two. It's 18 minutes past 4 o'clock. Thanks for being with us right here on the Extravaganza. Extended montage there for obvious reasons. It was an extended weekend. A crazy weekend of college basketball upsets highlighted, as you just heard there, by the UMBC. Jim Cushlin said he's one of four people in America not at that school who actually knew what UMBC was before they played Virginia. I know I am one of the 320 million other Americans who had never heard of the initials UMBC. I had no earthly idea what it was. When I first saw UMBC, I thought maybe the Marine Corps had a basketball team. United Marines Basketball
Corps.
Well,
there is a Marine Corps Academy, isn't there? I think there is. The
but
way
I don't
there
think
is.
They do. I don't think there's a Marine Corps Academy like West Point.
Right. I was just going to say, it's not like West Point or the Naval Academy or even Air Force, but.
Right. I don't think they have like classes and basketball teams and football teams in the Marine Corps. They're just busy learning how to go out there and kill. Which is what their job is when we need to go to war. We send our Marines. And we send all, of course, of our fighting men and women. But anyway, I don't think there is. You're right, Jim. Or I don't think there is an academy for that. But the point is, I saw UMBC, and I just, who? Why? Huh? And that's why some people are calling that, by the way, the greatest upset. And I'm listening to, over the last 48 hours, I'm looking at Twitter. Oh, my God, this is more amazing than the Miracle on Ice. This is a bigger upset than Buster Douglas over Mike Tyson. And I was thinking to myself, will you please stop? Youngster, young man, stop. Check yourself. Slow your roll. Pump the brakes. Say it however you want, but relax. Stop being such a prisoner of the moment. Stop thinking that because something amazing happened, now it's the most amazing thing that ever happened in history. How many times do we have these conversations? Somebody will have a great game. Oh, my God, that's the greatest thing I've ever seen. No, it really isn't. You have forgotten many other things because time has allowed, those memories to fade just a little bit.
Let me say three things about that. And I'm going to go to the phones here, too. And if you're on hold, I see you there. Stay there. I'm coming right to you. 866-240-1065. Let me say this about that. Just because a 16 has never beaten a 1, it doesn't make it the greatest upset in college basketball history. It just doesn't. Let me tell you something. Tomorrow, if Tri-C sent its its community college basketball team out there to take on the University of Dayton, Tri-C's win would be bigger. Tri-C beating Dayton would be bigger than UMBC beating Virginia. Okay? Because it's a community college. These are both Division I-A schools. That's why they're there. They're both in the same division. Just because they slapped numbers next to their names before this game, one's a 16 and one is a 1, it does not mean that it was the greatest upset in history. It just does not. And my example to that is, if you were to slap seeds on Tri-C versus Dayton, Tri-C would be like a 300 seed, and Dayton would be like, I don't know, a 50 seed. It would be a much bigger disparity. And that might not be a good example because I'm making it up as I go. If you pick any community college in any part of the country and put them against a Division I school, if they upset them, which they could, somebody gets hot from three and just is unconscious, it can happen the same way it did for UMBC, right? And by the way, I'm picking community colleges because that's the other thing, Jim. When I saw UMBC, mm-hmm. I thought, when you hear the word county, right. You know, I think community college.
Right, because that's usually how they are. Owens being, you know, Owens around
community
here,
college.
Of course.
Oh, there you go. Let's do Owens.
They actually have
Owens
a good program
against,
for what it's worth, by the way.
Let's do Owens, Jim, against, how about Central Michigan? Just a middle of the pack MAC school. A community college team beating a Division I MAC team would be a bigger upset. That's all I'm saying. Now, let me go back into actual upsets that have happened. Okay, let's do that. Let's talk about actual upsets. First of all, this wasn't even Virginia's biggest upset loss in history. Does anybody remember Ralph Sampson at all? Am I the only person that remembers?
No, you're not, because I have a whole bunch on this, too, because I've been thinking about it since about 15 minutes after that game ended, knowing this conversation was inevitable.
When Ralph Sampson, honestly, was the greatest basketball player college basketball player maybe kind of perceived anyway in a generation. I mean, he was transformative, Jim. He was 7'4", and guys didn't grow that big then.
No. Maybe Hakeem at the same time was the only other one.
And he wasn't even close to that. You're talking about Hakeem Olajuwon?
I'm talking about in college basketball at that moment.
But Hakeem was like 7 foot.
Right, exactly. He was still shorter than Ralph Sampson. That's my point.
Well,
he wasn't the only one, but
there were 7 footers then. Patrick Ewing was in college basketball.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
Patrick Ewing was there too. There were still 7 footers, but they didn't grow to be 7'4". 7'4" was like, wait, what? That's kind of like when Sean Bradley came in at 7'6". And oh my God, he's 7'6". And when Manu Bol came in, and oh my God, he was 7'7". Okay, that was Ralph Sampson in 1974, except that unlike Sean Bradley and Manu Bol, Ralph Sampson was smooth and skilled and an absolute dominant force. Okay? So Ralph Sampson and his number one rated in 1982 Virginia Cavaliers played the Chaminade. Do you remember the nickname, Jim?
I do indeed, the Silver Swords.
The Chaminade Silver Swords. In 1982, at the Honolulu International Center in Honolulu, as a part of the early season tournament, you know, preseason tournament.
Actually, if I remember the story correct, they were coming back from like Tokyo, from like an Asian tournament with some other schools, and agreed to stop
and they
off
stopped
in Hawaii.
Off and played this team. That's it. Thank you. And Chaminade, to my recollection, was such a tiny program, Jim. They didn't have their own campus.
Yeah, they were 800 students at the time, and I want to say they were NAIA at the time.
They
now they're
NAIA.
Division II.
They were NAIA. That is correct. And they played, and they were housed. Their students went to school on a high school campus. They, like, shared dwelling with a high school. That's how tiny this was. When that team beat Ralph Sampson's Virginia Cavaliers 77-72, that was, without question, the biggest college basketball upset in history to that moment, and I would submit to you ever since. But I'm gonna bypass that one, only to point out this one. And I've pointed this one out on several other occasions whenever big upsets have happened and people talk about, oh, this is the greatest thing in history. Whenever they get, again, you know, kind of trapped in this prisoner of the moment type of thing. I will go back into the tournament now and talk about what happened just 3 years after that in 1985. When the number one ranked Georgetown Hoyas of the aforementioned Patrick Ewing, with David Wingate, Reggie Williams, Michael Jackson, Michael Graham, is that all? Those are most of the main big pieces that they had. That Georgetown team was considered to be as much of a mortal lock in the NCAA championship game over eighth-seeded Villanova, which remains, by the way, to this day, Jim, what is this? This is 33 years later. They remain the lowest seed to ever win the championship. They won the championship against a Georgetown team that was considered to be unbeatable. And when they had to play what is still known in most circles, but college basketball circles, still known as the perfect game. They had to pitch a perfect game. You remember they shot 77% from the floor? I mean, things that just are impossible. And that upset to me, despite it being an 8-1 in the national championship game, to me is still a much bigger shocking upset than a 16-1, especially when the one this year, Jim, was Virginia, which was considered by many people to be, well, kind of a sluggish, boring top seed. They win because they play stifling defense. They're not a great shooting team or a great scoring team, but they play stifling defense. They've only lost two games. They're ugly, but they get the job done. This wasn't a juggernaut, number one, the way that Georgetown team was. This wasn't a juggernaut team the way that quite frankly, a year earlier, Houston was in 1983, Phi Slamma Jamma, when they were beaten by North Carolina State and Jim Valvano. Those upsets were bigger than this one. And then you have people going outside of the college basketball world, Jim, and calling the UMBC win over Virginia the biggest upset in sports history. Again, using the seeding as my basis of my argument. If they were seeding national hockey teams in the 1980 Olympics, I don't even know if, you know, there's what, roughly 197 declared nations, sovereign nations identified by the world, by the UN and
only about NATO. 30 of them, they'll play hockey.
Okay. Well, the U.S. men's team, made up of its college kids that have been practicing together for a month before they played the Soviet national team, which plays together year round, and sent four players from that Soviet team to the Hockey Hall of Fame. You know, the U.S. team would have been seeded 190th. And I know you said they don't all play hockey, so that doesn't work. But that's the metaphor here is real. The Soviets were one. The U.S. team wasn't just like, you know, 16th seed in a region. They would have been dead last when you compare the players on one to the other. Their upset of the Russians in 1980, the miracle on ice, goes down as the greatest upset in sports history because of the very different almost worlds that the USSR, the Russian team, played in at that time compared to this group of college kids who just kind of got pulled together at the last minute the way we did back then with amateurism and put together to go play them. That to compare USMBC or what is it, UMBC to, and their win over Virginia to that is an insult to that hockey team. And then other people are saying this is bigger than Buster Douglas over Mike Tyson. Do you know that Mike Tyson was a 42-1 favorite? 42-1. Buster Douglas, nobody had ever heard of, similarly to UMBC in that regard. But if you think that the Virginia Cavaliers, UVA, this past weekend, Friday, if you think UVA scared every opponent in basketball the way Mike Tyson scared every heavyweight fighter in the world at that time, if you think they were the Tyson of this season, then you didn't, you weren't around. You weren't watching boxing back in 1990, 91, 92. You just weren't doing it. Mike Tyson was, I'm trying to think of a politically correct way to say this. He was a monster. He was a terror in black shoes and black trunks and a towel with a hole cut out of it for a robe and a face that just expressed a passion and an anger and a hatred for you that says, I'm not just going to beat you, I'm going to kill you in this ring. I'm going to take your life. Fighters were peeing their pants on the way to the ring as they walked down the aisle while their entrance music played. Virginia was no Mike Tyson. Virginia was just the number one seed in this year's tournament. Clearly, what Buster Douglas did that night made it, and we could go on and on. I could probably point to, if I wanted to belabor the point, which I don't, I could probably find four or five other upsets in sports history that make that are bigger than this one. But I know that people want to embrace the fact that this one has never happened before. No 16 has ever beaten a 1. Therefore, it must be the most incredible thing that has ever happened. No, it isn't. It was great. I loved it. I rooted for them in the second round, by the way. I really, really did, and I thought they had a chance, too, especially late. What an ugly game that was. It was like 37 to 34 for like, I don't know, 11 minutes. Nobody could score in that game yesterday. But I rooted for it. It's a great story, but let's keep everything in perspective. Was it the greatest upset in college basketball history? No. Just because it had a 16 and a 1 next to it doesn't mean it was the greatest upset ever. And secondly, was it the greatest upset in sports history? Stop. You're smoking crack. It wasn't even as big as the New York Jets beating the Baltimore Colts in Super Bowl number 3, being a 17-point dog in that game. Just stop. Go ahead, Jim.
You know, I've had a chance to think about this, too, you know, over the course of the weekend, because, again, we all knew that once that game goes final, that this type of debate was, whether correct or incorrect, inevitable. My thoughts on it are this. One, I agree it's not the greatest upset in sports history. Some of the ones you just laid out there are still bigger. Two, this game, though, must be put in the discussion of when you have, you know, list me your top 10, you know, greatest sports upsets of all time. I'm sorry, this one has to be there because of the historical nature of a 16 over a 1. I will disagree with you on two of your other college basketball ones, though. Given its historical nature, and it's never happened before, usually ones beat the 16s by an average, I read over the weekend, by an average of like 24, 25 points in a game. I'm sorry, that is a little bit bigger to me than Villanova and NC State.
Going to disagree because of the stakes. It's a first round game.
Well, you're talking about people living in the moment. I'm going to challenge you and say, you're get off my lawn guy right now.
But it's a first round game, Jim. It's a first round game versus the national championship game. Two teams that were considered to be unbeatable and very low ranked teams. An 8 beating a 1.
Any 1 over a 16 is unbeatable, or was until Friday.
An 8 over a 1 in a national championship game. Especially depending on the one. And see, that's the other point when I was just making the Tyson and Virginia comparison. The Tyson, the Georgetown and Virginia comparison, too. Virginia, this team was essentially, like I said, a win-ugly kind of not even very well-respected number one, even though they were one overall. To me, what it says is the ones in this tournament stink. And the fact that two of them are gone by the time we get to the round of 16 is somewhat evidence of that. But this is just a parody-ridden, different kind of tournament, in my view anyway. But Virginia wasn't even close to being the dominant number one that Houston was when they played Valvano and NC State. Wasn't even close to being a dominant number one that Georgetown was when they played Villanova in that game. So those games in the NCAA final were teams that were woefully undermanned compared to two of the most dominant teams of the era, and maybe of all eras, to be honest with you, when you go back and look at their records and what they had done. Compared to this, Virginia team isn't dominant in any way, shape, or form. Did not do anything better than virtually anybody else. They just played a complete game and lost fewer games than anybody else in the regular season. They had two losses. This Virginia team is not on that level, Jim. So you're being blinded by 16 and 1 rather than quality of the 1 versus quality of the 16, quality of the 1 in those national championship games, and the quality of the teams that ended up beating them.
to a degree, you might be right, but I don't agree that I'm fully being blinded by it, because you can't escape the fact that 16 over 1 had never happened. I even looked it up and have a list. Prior to that one, I mentioned that it's about 25 points is the average 1 over a 16. Heck, there were only 15, 16 versus 1 games before this that were even decided by single digits, let alone getting blown out by that. I think
what you just described is the blindness that I accused you of, because you're all about the 16-1, the 16-1, the 16-1, and the quality of the ones is not being measured here. The quality of this Virginia team is not like some massive, oh my God, this is a world beater. You know, this is UNLV with Larry Johnson and Stacey Augmon and Greg Anthony and on down the line. This is some all-time team that got beat by 16. No, this just happened to be a one this year in what is a very, very parity-ridden tournament. And that's why I think your 16-1 fixation is you're looking up the 16-1 histories, looking at the margins of victory, looking at the number of single-digit victories, and so on and so forth. If the only thing that you can have, and I don't mean you, Jim, picking on you, the only thing if a person can hang their hat on in making this the greatest upset of college basketball is 16-1, then the argument has got to end, because quality of the 16 and the quality of the 1 have to matter.
We're going to have to agree to disagree on that last part, because I truly think that this still means something. The fact that it literally had never happened before, to the point where we're always questioning, is this the year we're finally going to see it? I do believe that means something, and that's why, to me at least,
I'm not saying it means nothing, Jim.
By the way, through it all,
just not the best, not the most amazing upset ever. To me, there are other games that have been in the tournament that have been far more amazing upsets than this one, solely because this one happens to have the designation of a 16 versus 1, which had never been done before. Let me put it another way, Jim. If this was the second time a 16 had beaten a 1, if it had happened once before, would that other one automatically have been the biggest upset ever, and this one now the second biggest upset ever? Would you argue that? Or would you need to look at all of the games and the quality of the opponents and the quality of the ones like I'm doing right now?
If it happens again, then I might have to.
Okay, that's what I'm saying. The fact that this is the first time it happened is where you're fixated on, is just the first time. It had never been done before. But when it happens again, you're going to look back and say, okay, it wasn't that big of a deal. It was much more shocking
even
for Villanova to shoot
77%
from the floor and beat Hoya Paranoia back in 1985.
Even though it probably won't happen for another 20, 25, 30 years, just as long as it took for this one to happen.
But you know what? I disagree with that, and here's why. Because of what I was talking about with Maniloff. Because I truly believe that we are on our way, unless something is done about one-and-dones. I think some of the traditional powers are going to continue to be surprised by some of these smaller conference automatic bid qualifying.
I don't disagree with
schools.
That. Your athletic talent, that natural athletic talent can only take you so far when you're not a cohesive unit.
Bingo. That's what I mean. And I think that's what is leading to some of these things. It's leading to a Buffalo over in Arizona. It's leading to the USNBC and so on and so forth. I promised Sam in Toledo I would get him in here before we took a timeout. So let me do that real quick. If he's still holding after all of that, I appreciate it very much. Sam, are you there?
I am here. Thank you so much for taking my call.
My friend, is a virtue. God bless you. Thank you for that. Go ahead.
You guys are good. I almost forgot why I called.
Well, you called to talk about Ty Lue, right? And the Cavaliers.
No. I'm joking.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
I heard the Cleveland sports writer call about Ty Lue, and I just thought it was important. I know this isn't a self-help channel by any means, and you guys are really entertaining. I love the show, but I just thought it was important that I call in. I'm 31 years old, out of Toledo. And about 4 years ago, I started having similar condition as the sports writer, and as potentially Ty Lue and Kevin Love, and Kanye West went through something similar as well. And he was saying a lot of things along the lines of, you know, I can barely travel now, but I give him a lot of courage for coming on the show. But I just wanted to make a point to call, because in my experience, it was so important to embrace the anxiety rather than avoid it. When I learned to embrace it, and understand where anxiety comes from. Anxiety comes from when you leave the present moment. So what I did was I stayed in the present moment, didn't try to run away from my anxiety, and I just embraced it, okay? And I know that that's very simplified, and, you know, I'm not a doctor by any means, but I'm just super grateful for life, and I don't use terms like it's very hard. You know what I mean? I chose to leave those words out of my vocabulary, and for whatever it's worth, maybe there's just one listener that gets something out of that. But I just wanted to call and make it a point. You know, I've never called into a radio station before. And heck, I'm nervous about this call. But instead
of you're doing a phenomenal job, by the way, and by and your gesture to, you know, share that story and, as you say, make a difference in somebody else's life who might have a similar condition and they don't realize it or they don't know how to approach it or how to deal with it. I think that's enormous, and I have a great respect for you for doing that.
Cool. And life is great, and I just take that approach and enjoy each second and take it moment by moment, because nothing matters in the past or in the future, just this moment right now. So I appreciate the show, and thank you so much for taking my call, and I'm just going to hang up, but enjoy everybody.
Sam, thank you for that great call. And you know what Sam just did? He made it sound very trivial, Jim, the big argument we were just having.
Yeah, no kidding.
Upsets, because that is such a bigger point and such a bigger story, and I really appreciate that. God bless, my friend. All right, let's catch up, because we have to talk to Paul Keels about the end of the Buckeyes season, which, of course, happened in the round of 32 when we come right back.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. Rolling on, final segment of the extravaganza on this Monday. Thanks so much for being with us. It's 4:47. Let's talk now to the great Paul Keels, the voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes on the Buckeyes Radio Network. Hey, Paul, how are you, sir?
I'm good, Bob. How are you doing?
I am doing well. Still trying to process and make some sense out of everything that just happened this weekend.
What a crazy tournament so far, huh?
Oh, my goodness. You aren't kidding. You know what? Hey, since Jim and I just had a pretty big argument about the biggest upset in college tournament history or college basketball history, let's hit that before we talk about the Buckeyes and the end of their season after that loss to Gonzaga, Paul. You know, obviously USMBC or UMBC. Did you know UMBC before they played this game? Had you heard of that school?
Yes, they played here in Columbus against Ohio State about maybe 3 to 5 years ago.
Oh, okay.
So, yes, I was mildly aware of them.
Okay, well, then that's more than most of us. even nationally, people are going, you have to Google it. Look up who these guys are. It's a county, University of Maryland, Baltimore County school, obviously. So, anyway, a 16 over a 1 had never happened before. Does that in and of itself make this the greatest upset in college basketball history, Paul Keels?
I think so. Now, I think you can also make the distinction between championship games, and you can look at, you know, maybe the Villanova win over Georgetown or NC State over Houston. But
were you listening to our segment before?
No,
you
I wasn't. No, not at all. But I think you can make the argument, because, and here's maybe a distinguishing qualifier. UMBC wouldn't be in the tournament if it were not for hitting a last second shot in their conference championship game at Vermont. So it's not even a team that dominated or really was superior in their league. They won it because they hit a last-second shot in their conference championship game. So I think, yes, it probably is the biggest upset in college basketball, given the stakes.
You know what, Paul, that is so amazing that you just said that, and the example you went to, because that was Jim and I. We just had a great argument about that. He is saying the same thing you just said. I argued that Villanova, because it was a championship game, because Georgetown was, I mean, it was Hoya Paranoia. I mean, they were a dominant all-time force, and for Villanova, an 8 seed, to upset them, they had to play what has come to be known in basketball circles as the perfect game. They shot 77% from the floor, for crying out loud, against the most swarming defense anybody had ever seen. And somehow they got that done. And I argued what you just said, that you know, the fact that it was a championship game against the beast of not just that year, but of the era, compared to a Virginia team that lost to this 16 seed that, quite frankly, they were the number one overall seed, but I don't think anybody looked at Virginia as being some sort of a, you know, monstrous presence in the annals of college basketball history.
You know, I would politely disagree, Bob, only because having watched them in the ACC championship game, I thought Virginia maybe sold people more on what they could do offensively. They were more known for their defense.
Yeah.
But what they did offensively against North Carolina, I think, made them a team that you really thought could make the run. Now, here's the other thing about the Villanova game. Remember, that one had the significance. It brought about a rule change. The shot clock came into play after the Villanova game. So,
that's right.
I think you can make arguments each way, but if I had to choose, I would choose UMBC only because, if you remember back to the mid-80s, Villanova had three really competitive games with Georgetown, two in the regular season and one in their conference tournament. There was no way of thinking that UMBC would be competitive with Virginia.
Since you brought up the ACC championship game and what Virginia was able to do to North Carolina, what was your shock level at what Texas A&M just did to the Tar Heels?
You know, that was I was so frustrated after seeing Cincinnati lose late yesterday. I was done with watching the evening games, and unfortunately this morning found out that my alma mater, Xavier, had lost. and then saw the North Carolina loss. I have to admit, Bob, I'm not that familiar with the Aggies and I haven't really had a chance to watch them, but it just kind of seems to hold suit with the way this tournament has gone. Just when you think you might have an idea of something, you have to throw it out. Now, having said all of that, I think this was a North Carolina team that maybe across the board and consistently wasn't as good as at times they showed they could be.
Paul, how important is it for the Blue Bloods that are left to advance to the Elite Eight and to have at least a pair of them in the Final Four? And what I mean by that is, you know, you still have a chance in the Elite Eight for 1-2 Kansas versus Duke. You still have a chance for 1-2 Villanova versus Purdue. On the other side, it's a little different. I mean, Kentucky's a 5, but it's still Kentucky, right? You know, there are still some names here. And what I mean by that is, I just wonder, as much as exciting as the upsets are, if we end up having, you know, 11 versus 5 in the Elite Eight, Syracuse and Clemson, if we end up having, you know, Texas Tech and West Virginia instead of Villanova versus Purdue, if that's great for college basketball, or if people will say, I don't know any of those players, and I don't know those coaches, and I don't know, well, you might know Jim Boeheim, but I don't know much about those programs that are the upstarts here, and I'm just not interested.
Well, having seen Kentucky when they played out in Boise, being in the same location with Ohio State, they're very vulnerable. They were fortunate to beat Davidson in the first night. I think Buffalo had pretty much used up all their ammunition, knocking Arizona out, and didn't have much left for Kentucky. It's a team that starts 5 freshmen, but this is not the high-level talented 5 freshmen that Calipari is used to having. But Bob, I think with what's happened now, you got to wonder if people's curiosity is now, who can get to the Final Four that you didn't think could get there? You know, certainly Michigan was a team we thought was riding a big wave going in. They were fortunate to get a last-second shot to beat Houston. You know, maybe this clears the way a little bit more for West Virginia, who earlier on you thought because their defense could be a Final Four team. I don't know that it's that important for the Blue Bloods to get there, because if you're a fan of a team that's out of it, the casual fans, you know, tend to sometimes kind of embrace those that they don't know that much about.
I think you might be right, especially, though, if one of those teams is playing a Blue Blood or at least a very well-known team, because now it's
there you go.
Can they continue the ride of upsets? But if it's 9 versus 7, for example, you know, if Texas A&M, which is a 7, beats 3 Michigan and faces, 9 Florida State, if they beat 4 Gonzaga, is anybody going to be watching 7 versus 9 to see can the magical run continue, or is it, these are two very mid to lower seeded teams, I don't really care that much, and I think maybe that's where the answer lies. But in the Paul, in the time we have left, let's talk about the Bucks. They closed the gap. I think we can say that after being destroyed by Gonzaga in the regular season, as we discussed. You know, it wasn't going to be an easy task, but they made a heck of a run against the Zags in losing 90-84. What's your takeaway from the Buckeyes' last game of the season?
Yeah, well, and all of that considering they fell behind 15-0 from the start of the game. I think it's a credit to them that they came back and made it a game. I think it's also a credit that they made Gonzaga beat them with less than their two best players having the big nights. It was really Hachimura and Norvell that really were the ones that killed Ohio State. Let's not lose sight of the fact that their first-round game against South Dakota State was a win over a mid-major team that's better than most mid-major teams that we've thought about. If anybody told you at the start of the season, Bob, that this was going to be an Ohio State team that would get to the second round of the NCAA tournament, I think we would have all taken it and been happy. A great story, some great moments. Yeah, it's disappointing when it ends, but I think certainly Chris Holtman's first year started with some very memorable moments.
Kata Bates-Diop goes out his last game as a junior with 28 points. Is he done?
I'm not sure. What I'm guessing, he will probably get evaluated minus an agent, wait for the input he gets back, and then make a decision. I the thing that maybe sways him leaving, remember, he lost most of the season a year ago to injury. And, you know, if you've already been injured once and you had the kind of year he had, you might not be able to duplicate that in another year. So it's hard to say right now. I think within the next week we'll know something, but you would venture a guess. He'll get evaluated first minus an agent and then make a decision where he's going to go from there.
two Big Ten teams left. Well, you know what? Let me just quickly on Michigan State. Again, another just amazing game, another amazing performance as Syracuse just, you know, just would not be denied. And, again, that's a play-in Syracuse team, not a traditionally dominant Syracuse team as an 11 seed that took down Sparty. And Tom Izzo was more, in my opinion, overly emotional. I don't know if you heard him postgame than I've heard him in previous tournaments where he's lost. This is obviously a national champion, a multi-time Final Four finisher. He seemed very emotional after this one. I think maybe the trials and travails of the Michigan State situation got to him. Were you surprised at Sparty going out before the round of 16?
Surprised, but one-day turnaround for Syracuse in their zone is tough. And this is a Michigan State team that is younger than the ones we've seen advance in the past. That's something Tom Izzo has talked about a lot, their youth. But not surprising that he was so emotional, as you said, Bob, given everything that they've gone through that has been non-basketball related.
So still two chances for the Big Ten to get into the Elite Eight, Purdue and Michigan. Do you think either or both of them advance?
I think Purdue's chances are hurt losing Isaac Haas, but they still have a better chance probably than Michigan.
Very good stuff. Paul, it's always a pleasure. It has been both football and basketball seasons talking about the Buckeyes and, of course, the national sports with you. We always appreciate it. And I can't wait until spring football starts so we can chat again. Sound okay?
Sounds good, Bob.
Thank you very much, Paul. Paul Keels, the voice of the Buckeyes, joining us here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket to wrap it up. Stay where you are. Why? Because if you don't, you'll miss Drive Time with Mike Miller, and you don't want to do that. That is always a good thing to listen to. We're back tomorrow at 3 o'clock for the next extravaganza with a lot more news on Ty Lue and what happened to the Cavaliers. And who knows, maybe more news on the outgoing Stan Van Sloppy as the Pistons continue to struggle to the finish. All of that will be on tomorrow's program. Have a great day.